evidently precipitated some folks to come to the elders and ask, are there some problems in the church here that we're not aware of? The answer is no. Thank God. And we don't want problems to arise in the future. And the purpose of that lesson and this lesson is to help us avoid some of the problems that are plaguing our brotherhood and, in reality, most religious groups today. And the best time to address a problem is before it rears its head. Some of your mothers, some of our mothers told us that an ounce of prevention is worth what? A pound of cure. And that really is true. Most disasters could have been avoided if those responsible had taken care to do basic maintenance. And admittedly, basic maintenance is costly, and it's not very exciting. But if it's neglected, there will be disaster, inevitably. Paul admonished Timothy in 1 Timothy 4:16, keep a close watch on how you live and on your teaching. Stay true to what is right for the sake of your own salvation and the salvation of those who hear you. New Living Translation. We were and are examining the fact that we each have a filter through which we view the world and life. And that filter determines our attitude about everything in the world and how we view it. And this filter that we each have is formed by our psychological, educational, social, and cultural experiences and teachings. And over time, each one of us uses this filter to build up a personal frame of reference by viewing things through our filter. And this forms our personal framework. And any given incident that happens in the world, people see it and view it differently. And obviously, each person's framework is to some greater or lesser degree different. For example, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, for most of us, because we have similar cultural experiences, background, etc., that brings certain feelings. We think about that in a certain way. But if you were to go to China and ask them how they felt about Pearl Harbor, the Japanese dropping the bomb on Pearl Harbor, they would tell you that that was one of the greatest days in history. They have a completely different sense of what that meant, what that incident meant, because Japan was literally tearing that country apart, and they knew that if they didn't get some help, then their cause was lost. And so when Japan bombed Pearl Harbor, that meant that the U.S. was coming into the war, and nothing could have been greater for them than that. If you go to Japan and ask them how they feel about Pearl Harbor, you probably would get some pretty mixed reactions, because if we really get down to it, not many of us really know why they bombed Pearl Harbor. I mean, if you just really stop and somebody said to you, why did they bomb Pearl Harbor? Many of us wouldn't know why they did. But they had their reasons, and they felt like that they had been backed into a corner. They consequently made some plans as a result of that, and they felt like that the only deterrent to their plans was America, and the United States had conveniently taken its fleet, taken it out to Hawaii, so it was within striking distance of them. So they thought if they crippled the American fleet, then they would have about a year to do what they wanted to before they had to contend with the Americans. And so now that it's turned out the way that it has, and the consequences are, you would probably have mixed feelings about that at this point. But our framework, and the reason I bring that up is not for a history lesson, but just to show that our framework of reference is very, very different. And this determines how we perceive reality. We tend to, a little aside right here, as our framework is being formed, to support the other side, then you're going to find it. And this becomes, for many, as we formulate through our filter, our framework, this becomes my truth. And this becomes my reality. It becomes the basis for living my life. I make my decisions depending on my filter and my framework and how I assess things that happen in this world. And let me be quick to say that's a mistake. It's inevitable, but it's a mistake. Proverbs 3:5 admonishes, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. Proverbs 14:12 says, there's a path before each person that seems right, but it ends in death. And so we all have this framework through which we filter the world. And we determine, make determinations and base our life on that. This has been developed by our environment. We need to be clear about where this comes from because we feel really strongly about it. I mean, it gives us, if somebody says, follow your gut reaction, where did you get that gut reaction? You got it from exactly what we're talking about here. Every one of us has this filter, and this filter has come to us. We have developed it because of our environment. Now, we will all agree, I think, that not all of our environment has been good and positive and even true. And yet, that's what we use to develop our sense of what's right and what's wrong and what's true and how this, what this means to me. And then the next line is, every one of us has to change our filter to bring it in line with God's teaching and Bible teaching. Every single one of us. You think a lot of your filter. You think a lot of your reasoning. You think a lot of your opinions. And all those things come from this filter that you have developed that came from your background. And you think it's really true and it's really right and you'll go to bat for it. But your willingness to change your filter totally depends on your faith in God. That's why without faith, that's another reason that why it's impossible to please God without faith. Because every single one of us has to change our filter. Because we got our filter through the five senses, and that makes up the natural man that the Bible talks about. The flesh that the Bible talks about. And we either live by the flesh or we live by the Spirit. And as Christians, if you're out here in the world and you're not a Christian, then you don't really have an alternative. You just develop your senses and you refine your framework and you get education and you get experiences and that causes you to tweak your framework over a period of time. But you'll never bring it in line. There's not anything in the world that can bring it in line with God and God's reasoning and God's way that He wants us to live and think and act. And so we have to recognize where our filter came from, recognize that it's inadequate, if even as strongly as we feel about certain things, it's inadequate, and realize that the only one that can straighten our filter out is God. The only one who can teach us how to think is God. The only one who can teach us how to love. We think we know how to do these things, but we know what the world has taught us. Not everything that the world has taught us is wrong, but it falls far, far short of God. Let's briefly talk about some of the conflict that exists whenever we have a group of people, either two people or a group of people who are trying to coexist with these different frameworks. How in the world are we going to bring people together and have unity, true unity, when we think so differently about so many things and we feel so strongly about it? And we could, I would add right here, we could be discussing marriage right here. We could be discussing two people that bring two different frameworks together and they try to live very, very closely together as husband and wife and the conflicts that come as a result of having different filters in our life. But we're not. We're going to be talking about the church. And so I want to take a few moments and define for you or outline for you or capsulize for you the anatomy of case. You've decided that the church where you attend is not meeting your needs for whatever reason. You don't like the preacher, or you don't like the elders, or somebody's hurt your feelings, or you don't like the kind of soap that they have in the bathrooms, or whatever. If you want to get your feelings hurt, one is about as good as another. So, first of all, there are some things, as we start this journey here, there are some things that are so trivial that even you recognize that you're not going to look very good if you press this issue to other people. And so what are you going to do? Because you've got this burr in your saddle, you've got this thing that you're upset about, that you're angry about, and you're going to press it, but even you recognize that this is pretty trivial. Well, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to cast around and you're going to find something that you realize is more serious, that people are more likely to get upset about than what kind of soap they have in the bathroom or this particular thing that you like or you don't like. And so you will pick an issue to substitute quite often. Doesn't happen all the time. Very often it happens that you'll pick an issue that people will sympathize with. And it will quite often go from being a personal preference to a doctrine. I've seen it over and over and over again. Churches split, and people will say, well, they split over this particular doctrine. And the truth is, that's not true. That's what got put to the front to make it look like it was doctrinal, but it wasn't. It was somebody was bullheaded, and somebody had something that made them mad, and they didn't like something that somebody did, and they were determined that they were going to punish somebody and do something about it, and so they had to make it be something doctrinal. Consequently, we have, in many communities, lots of different churches who hold slightly different variations of doctrine that are, to most people, relatively minute, but they made them be really, really important issues. And so you'll have, I know one county in Mississippi at one time that had 14 churches of Christ and no two of them fellowshiped one another. That's truth. I don't want to, a little bit of a disclaimer here. I don't want to make it appear that every issue is trivial. There are some issues that are not trivial. There are some issues that you must go to the mat for. You don't have a choice. But let's assume that this particular issue is not actually a violation of Scripture, but rather it's a matter of preference or liberty. And I have to confess that I do believe that the very vast majority of problems in the church are matters of liberty rather than doctrinal matters. That is, all of them except mine. Do you understand what I just said? So you have an issue that you've chosen to pursue. You're unhappy. You begin collecting evidence to prove your case, and that means that before very long, you're not going to be able to see anything good. Soon, you'll see problems everywhere in everything. Because that's what you're looking for, and you find what you're looking for. You soon will not be able to see anything good. And if somebody brings some beautiful flowers around and you smell them, then you'll think of a funeral. Changes your life. Your main focus is now to persuade as many people as possible of your issue, to get people as upset as you are about your issue. And your friends are usually easy targets for that, unfortunately. There's one reason that offended preachers often do the most damage to their close friends. Because whenever some issue comes up, it becomes obviously an issue of that's going to create a problem with them being here in the congregation. Then it's really natural, not just preachers, but preachers also, to reach out and grab your closest friends and just pour your heart out to them and tell them all the problems and tell them how you've been mistreated and tell them all these things. And the unfortunate thing is that you're probably, as a preacher, you're probably going to end you're going to leave your friends, the people that you love the most, in the worst shape of all. Because now they're angry and they're hostile and there's people that they can't stand, and you've riled them up, you've gotten them upset about this issue, and you very well may cost them their soul. And that would be a really, really sad thing to do to your very best friends, wouldn't it? And so we need to take note of that. We soon end up with a group, as large as we're able to get together, that says, it's broke. We've got to fix it. And another group that says, no, it's not broke. And we're not going to fix it. And each one of you now has your own reality that came to you through your filter, through your framework. And you're convinced that you're right. Now what's going to happen? Well, any number of things. Not many of them very good. The first possibility is the church is going to split. You or somebody in your group is going to gather your group up, and you're going to become so angry that you're going to have to go 3 miles away somewhere, and you're going to have to start another church. Or someone will take up a position just short of this, short of splitting. Some will take up a position on this side of the auditorium where they don't have to look at somebody on this side of the auditorium, and you just have this unwritten rule that this group goes out this door and this group goes out this door, and you don't have to talk to one another. And that's the way it's going to be until one of you dies. Or if it's a worship preference thing that you've gotten upset about, the leadership may choose to offer two different styles of worship, having two different assemblies, in effect, having two different congregations under the same roof. And I can tell you that that's not going to work for very long. It may seem to be a solution that's acceptable for a while, but one group is going to win sooner or later. And the church is going to take on the identity of that group, whichever one it may be. Or an increasingly popular solution for many groups is to form a community-style church, community church style, in which participants can come and remain anonymous and come as you are and believe whatever you want, and nobody is going to question you about that. There's not going to be any kind of conflict over what your doctrine is. And so you just come and serve at your own comfort level, whatever that may be. And that solves the problem, right? Well, I will say, we will see. History will tell. Because that's really a popular solution that people are offering today, in which we minimize or maybe even dispense with doctrine altogether. As long as you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, you're my brother. And then it's not very long until you drop that. And that's not even a criteria for you being a part. Or another thing that may happen, and hopefully does, is we have church leadership who's vigilant and identifies problems before they fester and before they become a problem, and addresses them lovingly, directly, and firmly, privately if possible, and publicly if it's not possible. And addresses that problem and puts it on top of the table. Leaders who are able to discern the difference between opinions and doctrine and are capable of handling each appropriately. And so when that happens, everybody's going to be happy, right? Nope. They're not. But the church will survive the problem. Not unscathed, but not destroyed. And stronger as a result of it. And will love and respect and follow leaders who lead in this way. Now, for those of you who are asking, why is a preacher preaching on this stuff? This is not very fun. My answer, I've already given you one answer at the beginning, but I'll give you another answer in different words. The reason that I'm preaching this is for the same reason that the elders carefully prepared and presented and printed their two statements, which you can read on our website. And so you go and ask them why they prepared, why they felt a need to prepare those statements and make them public. And listen real carefully and you'll know at least some of why I'm preaching this sermon. You can call it preventive maintenance if you like. If you're educated regarding the how and why of church problems, you can avoid them if you want to. Some people don't want to. They want to create problems that makes them feel important. Now, let's get back to considering some of the consequences that each of us has regarding our particular framework filter, which strongly influences our perception. When I was a kid in my granddaddy's country store in Louisiana, way out in the rural cotton patch, I used to hear old men, and that's all relative term now, talking about, particularly in the wintertime, whenever the crops were in and they were all coming into this country store and sit around the old potbelly stove and spit Garrett snuff in the spittoon and eat peanuts. And I would listen to them talk, and I enjoyed listening to them talk because I thought they were really, really wise. I'm not so sure these days, but I really thought they were then. And I can remember how many times they would start out what they were going to say with this phrase. Well, back when I was in the war, and then they would start. They just told you what their filter was. Because one of the major contributors to our filter are the major events which happened in our lives, particularly in our younger years. And I don't mean infancy years, even though that has some role in it. I mean on up into our mid-20s. The major events that happen in our life determine what our filter is and how we view things today. We interpret current events in light of significant events in our past. We can't help it. Whenever you're giving advice to your children, it's not at all unusual for you to think back of something that happened to you in your life, and you relate this incident to that incident, and that helps you form the advice that you give that child, doesn't it? We interpret current events in light of significant events in our past. And if something tragic occurred, you relate that to how you deal with certain things today and the advice that you give people of how to deal with it. For instance, maybe as a young person you experienced a tornado up close and personal. And maybe it killed someone that you loved. Or maybe whenever you came out of a storm cellar or you came back to your home place, you have burned in your brain a picture of just the absolute devastation of your home and the barn and everything that was there. And that's just burned in your brain. Now, whenever threatening weather occurs, does that affect you? Of course it does. My grandmother always was terrified whenever threatening weather came. And consequently, she terrified me as a little kid, you know, every time a cloud would come up and she'd say the world's going to come to an end or something, you know, and it just scared me to death. Or maybe you were abused or abandoned as a child. Does that affect your relationship today with your husband or your wife or with your children? Even though you may not want it to, does that affect your relationship with them? Oh, yeah. It does, doesn't it? And the interesting thing is, other people have not had that same basis for their framework. Their filter is not exactly the same as yours. Consequently, they have difficulty understanding you and why you think and act and talk the way that you do. They don't have a basis for understanding why you get so upset about this or why you have such a reaction or non-reaction to this. And what will happen quite often is if it involves something personal enough in your relationship, then they'll start pushing you away or they'll start avoiding you. And you don't understand why, and it hurts your feelings. And all of these things work into these personal relationships. And not understanding, people have to try to give it some meaning, and so they misinterpret what you say, or they misinterpret your actions, and that leads to lots of heartache in our life. And every one of us has experienced that to some degree. Maybe we didn't know what to attribute it to, but every one of us have experienced that. On the other hand, guess what? They have different experiences which influence their behavior, and you have difficulty understanding them, and you may misinterpret their motives or their actions. And so, are we doomed to live in a misunderstanding and distrust and division? Well, my answer is, that's up to you. And right here, let me add a little addendum right here. Most of us like to talk about the problem and illustrate the problem like we've been doing here, and we relate to that. But I've noticed that some folks get angry when you suggest that there's something that they can do to make it different. It's called a victim mentality. And many of us fall into that to some degree or other. We just say, that's the way I am. And people can take it, or they can leave it. So if you're happy living that way, there's nothing I can say that's going to change your situation. Or if you're resigned to your isolation and the difficulties that you experience in your marriage or in your relationship with other people, you probably can't be motivated to do anything that's going to change that situation if you're resigned to it and you think it's just the way it has to be. Let me tell you what change has to occur to keep this otherwise inevitable misunderstanding, distrust, division from occurring. Number one, we have to focus our thoughts and our lives on commonalities rather than differences. We've got to start thinking about what we have in common. We have, as Christians, one Lord, one faith, one hope, one baptism, don't we? One God, one Father who is over all, in all, and through all. We have something really in common, and the truth is it's the most important thing in our life. And when we start focusing on that together, then it pulls us together. When we start focusing on the hurts that we have or the things that we have in our filter that cause us to be somewhat distant to other people or look really people like they're really weird or funny, then you start focusing on those things and you're going to have more and more difficulties in your life. And you know what's going to happen whenever you start focusing on your commonalities that you have with others? It's going to change your filter. Oh, yeah. It's going to change your filter. It will begin to change your framework. You'll begin to see things entirely differently. Everybody doesn't have to be like you. Everybody doesn't have to think like you. Everybody doesn't have to dress like you. Everybody doesn't have to jump through your hoops. Can our filter be changed? If you're willing for it to be. And let me tell you a real shocker here. That's what Christ came to do for you. He came to change your filter. How many of you remember when you received the news that John Kennedy had been assassinated? How many of you remember where you were? What was going on? Now, I know you younger folks don't because you weren't there. Everything important happened before you were born. But I remember where I was. I remember exactly where I was. And I remember that the school principal broke in over the PA system over the whole school and announced the really sad news that President John Kennedy had been killed. And let me tell you something else I remember that most of you don't remember. This is a part of my filter. Instantaneously throughout the high school, I was a freshman in high school, throughout the high school, a shout of joy went up. Instantly. Now that's a part of my filter. Probably not a part of your filter. And see, if you're a young person and you've heard historically about this, that's something that just you can't even imagine that happened in the United States of America. That's the filter of where I grew up. Or that used to be my filter. I recognize that that's a wrong filter. I recognize that there was something really, really wrong that would cause that to happen to a whole group of people. And I realize that filters can be changed. And it really needs to be changed. Your filter needs to be changed too. Listen really closely. So we have stopped evaluating others from a human point of view. At one time, we thought of Christ merely from a human point of view. How differently we know him now. This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. A new person. The old life is gone and the new life has begun. 2 Corinthians 5, 16 and 17. Now, Lord willing, in the next lesson or so, we'll examine a few specific details about how some of us gain the particular filters and frameworks that we have, and this will help provide us a basis for understanding one another. You don't have to agree. You'll never agree with any one other person about everything. If you do, one of you is not doing any thinking. Okay, so that's not the goal. That's not the goal. But the goal is that we learn to understand one another and be somewhat sympathetic of one another and accept one another in Christ Jesus. And not let these things that we have, that we think and act and talk differently, keep us from being a part of a family and having a Christ-like love for one another. A love that supersedes anything that this world has to offer. Our filter, our framework is a result of the input of this world. Let's understand that. It provides the only basis that most people have to teach us about how to interpret things, how to feel about things, how to think about things, how to make decisions, until Jesus comes into your life. And now you've got a new source. Now you have the basis for gaining a completely new life, a new way of thinking about things, a new way of viewing things. And he'll teach us how to think like him if we'll let him. Our attitudes will change, our relationships will change, our future will change, and we will influence others around us positively. You know, the truth is, unless you want to, you don't have to die in the rut you're in. You got some things in your life that you know that need to be changed? That's exactly why Jesus Christ came, to give you the opportunity to change and make right the things in your life that are wrong. And it's up to you to have the courage to do that, because that's what he died to give you, this opportunity, while we stand and sing.